Okay.
This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Poetrix.
How did...
Eita olam. It is time for our weekly political discourse. And as before, we've invited our usual commentator and analyst. However, we keep bringing him back because he's good at what he does, not because we're related to him in any way. Just stating for the record. So please give a warm welcome back to Botsang Modimoame Muilwa. How you doing, brother man?
I'm good, brother Fesh.
What's up?
Better than last week, this week. Not fully recovered.
Yes, sir.
But I'm good. I can't complain.
Welcome to another week of Wow What a Week, brother.
Yeah, it's been a tough, hectic week.
Yes, sir.
You know, domestically and globally as well.
In fact, let's start at home. A giant biobab has fallen. In the death of Prince Mangosuthu Buthelezi.
Yes, yes.
Very divisive in terms of how people are seeing his legacy. Some people will say, all I remember is violence in the 90s or the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, other people are saying, but he was a statesman who rebuilt and rebranded after those 80s. Others are saying, you know, it's through his prime ministering that the Zulu nation were able to rebuild and become as great as they are again after what happened with the British a couple of hundred years ago.
Yes, yes.
So he, you know, he, like I said, highly divisive, depending on which side of history you're sitting.
Well, Fresh, luckily for some of us, we are in middle age.
Yeah.
And we've seen the 70s, 80s, 90s, and the 20s. But let me start by saying the soul of Prime Minister Mangosuthu Buthelezi rest in eternal peace. Mm. Not only as an elderly statesperson, but also as a parent to some of us. Mm. And I don't want to limit it to the Zulu nation only. Who amongst us is perfect and has lived a perfect life? None, even the most admired people on earth. But I'm also shocked at the way African people are reacting, especially those who come from the opposition of Mangosuthu Buthelezi, the person, and not only the political party opposition, because the African National Congress has officially come with various statements denouncing their members who have been talking negatively about the passing, about the history of Prince Buthelezi. Mm. But, you know, there's something I've learned as an African child, that you do not share the spoils of the deceased before they are buried. Mm. And that has been an African culture and practice. You know, the spirit of Mr. Buthelezi had not rested when everybody started bringing all the negative things that were surrounding him. And but I've known and I've seen Prince Mangosuthu Buthelezi. Coincidentally, Dr. Moss Mashamaide, who put together my biography, was busy putting together the biography of the first official biography of Dr. Prince Mangosuthu Buthelezi. And I've happened to have interacted with people who were very close to him as a person, as a father, as a parent, and as a political leader as well. But I don't think people should forget or put aside the wrong things that they think he may have made. We shouldn't do that. But this is not the time to be talking about such. And when people fail to confront him when he was alive, there are people like, for example, the City Press editor, Monty Makanya, was the first person who, you know, issued a statement and released some of his old writings, and he didn't start now, but it never changed. And why should we? When we look at the 80s in the townships, I grew up in a township. I've experienced violence. I've studied in Soweto. I've experienced violence between political parties. And why should we limit to an individual? Why wouldn't we sit and say today? And I know it's very funny. Mm-hmm. I've never heard of Inkatha fighting the PAC, PAC fighting Azapo, Inkatha fighting Azapo. It has always been the ANC versus somebody in the violence of the township. Mm. And what are people saying about that? Are they going to stand up today and say the forefathers of the ANC or the previous leaders of the ANC, they orchestrated violence? No, that is not true. They didn't do that. Violence has never been a good thing amongst African people. But also we know that there was a third force involved. Whether Inkatha Freedom Party or its leaders allowed the Third Force, being the apartheid government, to use them to fight the former liberation movements and particularly the ANC. It's something that is within our history books. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something that we know what transpired. But I think, personally, I think Dr. Mangosuthu Buthelezi did very well for this country politically. He may have a different political opinion, in my view. For example, we all know that he believed very strongly in the tribalistic cultural of the Zulu nation. But what's wrong with that? When you take your own culture and you put it in front, what's wrong with that? I may sit and say I'm a Motswana man, but I want to make my cultural activities and behavior and conduct to be diverse. But if somebody prefers to say, I'm Zulu and I want to remain Zulu and nothing but Zulu, what's wrong with that? Mm-hmm. The second part is, we know that he was a federalist. You know, he believed in a federal state. He doesn't believe in the unitary state and national government. But what's wrong in being a federalist? There's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. But sadly, people are forgetting that it was Prince Mangosuthu Buthelezi, who towards 1994 elections, if you remember, Inkatha joined the elections, they even had to add on ballot paper stickers, extra stickers, because he compromised for the sake of peace in the country, for the sake of democracy, for the sake of progression. He has been in the cabinet or an MP, not cabinet, but let me say an MP of South Africa from the dawn of democracy until the last day.
In fact, isn't he the longest serving member?
Yes. And there's quite a number of people, you know, with my relationship with Andile Mqhinqhama, I can tell you that Andile, when he was an EFF MP, he used to say to me, you will never believe the wisdom I'm getting from Dr. Buthelezi, from parliamentary processes. Yes, the day the BLF went to parliament after Andile was no longer an MP to present some paper, you know, Dr. Buthelezi was one of the people who were saying to Andile, I can't wait for you to come back to parliament and bring your problems into parliament. Mm. But people don't know those things because our media has painted an awful picture. Mm. Today, whether it's for the Zulu people or it's for the people from the KZN province, they have the Nongoma trust or land. And if you read the history books of this country, it was Prince Buthelezi who initiated that process, who made sure that land, which was in the forefront of the liberation struggle in South Africa, somebody would say, why didn't he do it for the whole country? But if he could do it for the people that he was leading as a prince or a prime minister of KwaZulu, let it be. But I think without showering him with praises and looking at negativities, I just think he did his part, he ran his race, and he passed on as an old statesman in South Africa. And I think we should be proud to have had a leader like Prince Mangosuthu Buthelezi.
He'll get a level one funeral today. What are your thoughts on that? And those who say, why is he getting a level one, but many others as great possibly as he didn't get level ones?
Look, it's a prerogative of the state. It's a prerogative, it's a presidential prerogative. If the president of the republic was sitting, it could have been any other president. Mm. And we have questioned so many people, why didn't they get level one? I think it's a well-deserved level one with full military, you know, honors. Mm. And I think being the longest serving member of parliament, being a leader of a political party, a prime minister of KwaZulu and the Zulu nation, which is the biggest, you know, nation in South Africa, I think it's a well-deserved thing. It's a well-deserved. And it's also, you know, to show when you negotiate, you don't really take. You sometimes give.
He compromised
to show that the ANC is still ruling in the country. And Prince Mangosuthu Buthelezi has been, you know, they were loggerheads historically, but he has been a friend of the ANC as well as the Democratic Alliance. And I think he has managed, being the leader of the IFP, to can create a relation between him and all other political parties. I haven't heard or seen one political party except individuals from various political parties denouncing Prince Mangosuthu Buthelezi and the role he played in the politics of the country. He was not only the leader of the IFP, he was a national leader of South Africa. And I think it's a well-deserved funeral that is a level one state funeral. And I think they will put this behind us and move on as a nation. But a legacy that he has left for us as a nation and particularly for the Zulu people, it's something we cannot undermine.
Absolutely. Let's keep it within the borders. Public Protector Busisiwe Mkhwebane is now former Public Protector Busisiwe Mkhwebane. Yes. Majority in Parliament agreed that she's guilty of misconduct for ignoring various court findings.
Yes.
And they also agree that she victimized officials during her tenure. And during her tenure as public protector. But for a lot of people, one of the big issues was Parliament sat today, and by tomorrow there was a letter from the president who often capitulates, who often hesitates, who might even look for a retired judge to say, should I write
it? I was also very surprised. That was very quick. I was still digesting.
And in fact, and I love the way he words it, listen, Parliament has decided.
Yeah.
So my job is to do what Parliament has decided.
Yeah, I don't know when does the president apply their mind independent of the...
In fact, he says the National finding. Assembly resolution compels to remove you from office.
Exactly. I don't think it compels, really. The president hired. It's the final buck stops with the president. But that was quick. I think that letter was long prepared.
It was ready.
It was ready. Yeah. Just the signature was there. He just issued it. But also to save time, knowing that he is left with less than 20 working days. The timing is, should this run after a contract has ended, you'd have had some labor relations implications. But they wanted to do it as fast as possible, that it should happen.
Concomitant.
Yes.
As he would say.
Exactly. So it's the former public protector now. She announced during the course of the week, I think on Wednesday, that she's taking this matter on review. And what people should understand is that an appeal and a review are two different things. You know, taking it on review has its own dynamics. They can only limit it to that report and what transpired there, whether she was being given a fair process or not. But it's the former public protector. Now we should look forward at the appointment of the recommended one or whether the president, now this is what we must look at, is President Ramaphosa going to act very swiftly in confirming Koleka as the public protector.
Colleague.
Yes, understand. So that's what we are waiting for. But I think the battle of Advocate Busuye Mkoba and the former public protector, it's going to be a very long bottle battle. I sat down and applied my mind to this. There's some elements towards it. People, you know, we spoke about it last week. What is at stake? Is the benefits that goes with the package of being a public protector itself. There's quite a number of benefits, not only the pension.
Sure.
You are entitled, for example, to a medical aid for life. You are further entitled to bodyguards or security personnel for a year or two after you leave the office. And then your pension fund, obviously. And there's other, you know, added stuff like, for example, 10 domestic flights per annum that she's entitled to fly internally.
So does she lose all of that?
She's going to lose all of that. However, and I'm going to watch this one very closely. The pension part of it, which is 9.something million as prescribed. Remember, the pension fund, it is not only a benefit you have. There's also a contribution from yourself as an employee.
Absolutely.
Understand? So people must not think the loss of the pension fund, and this will be now be governed by the Pension Fund Act. It's not going to be automatically a loss. But what they want her to do is to lose the state contribution towards her pension fund. But there's legal cases in that regard.
I was going to say, so her fighting this means what, though?
Look, it's very important for her to keep her benefits. But let's leave all those matters. The main benefit is the pension, the state contribution to the pension. But also remember now the danger of her being declared incompetent and all those things. It draws along the risky lines of her being declared a delinquent. And once it arrives at that point, it means she can't be able to function ever again anyway. She can't be a board member. She can't practice and all those. And we have seen how these people were vigorous, the committee, the public, the media, and everybody else regarding this matter. It wouldn't surprise me that after this process, somebody's going to jump and apply to court that Advocate Busuye Mkoba be declared a delinquent. You understand? So you can't be an executive member or executive board of anywhere. I mean, that will destroy your life permanently. And I think her battle is not just an empty battle of her wanting And that's what people should understand. It's not just her wanting to retain these benefits and the title of the former public protector. No. There's many other implications that a normal professional would actually go on this review to clear your name so that you can have your life after that office. Mm. And I think that's the fundamentally what she's going to battle for.
Some questions people have been asking on social media were, why did she not just resign?
Look, I think that's a principal decision. Mm. Yeah, that would have been an easy walk out if she would have resigned when this process started or when she was asked to resign. She would have walked away with those benefits. But look, it's a principle of saying, I didn't do wrong. Mm. And my legal team and advisors are saying, you didn't do anything wrong. If I resign, I'm going then what after? And then I think it's also trying to keep a brave face of saying, if you know you didn't do wrong, if you know you've got a strong case, you will obviously not resign and continue to do your work.
What are your thoughts on her playing victim, though? Because she's been very good at playing victim. She's been very good at saying, it's because I'm a black woman. Despite the fact that her predecessor was a black woman also.
Actually.
She's played victim despite the fact that even along the different courts, they said she doesn't necessarily have a proper grasp of the law, for instance. There are even instances where she admitted that she could have done better, but she still proceeded to play victim. What are your thoughts on that?
Was it her? Or was it us, the followers, the media, and the supporters who were putting the black and the woman thing up front?
No, she said it. She said it at the commission.
Yeah, okay, but I don't think,
if I'm not mistaken, I'm sure she said it at the commission.
I don't think that should have been the issue. Mm. I don't think Busim Kwabane was being attacked because she was a black woman.
She likened it to GBV even.
I don't think that was the issue because her predecessor, as you correctly said, was a black woman as well. Understand? And even the one, I think it was Mushwana before, it was a black person. So I don't think it was a racial issue. I don't think it was a gender issue. Mm. I think it had everything to do with the factions within the ruling party.
I was going
to
say, did she play politics?
She played politics. Mm. I think she played politics. It became out and clear that she's been seen as belonging to a certain faction of the ruling party. And if Busim Kwabane would have stood up and said, I am being victimized, I'm being harassed, I'm being charged because I'm knocking at the doors of people like the president and other important people, I would have bought that story better. But also that's not unique because the previous public protector also went for Jacob Zuma. You know, Chuluma Zonzela went for Jacob Zuma and other high-ranking officials. So it's in the nature of that office. I don't think it had to do with race. I don't think it had to do with gender. I think it had to do with the person.
Is she a victim?
Look, I don't think it's a victim. I don't think it's victimization. I personally think it's an unfortunate phase whereby she was in the wrong position at the wrong time. You know what I'm saying? That's one. Two, I also think it had to do with her doing her work. All this is related to her work, not the personality. It's her doing to her work. Whether other people are satisfied with her work or not, it's immaterial in this instance. But I don't think it's a victim of professionalism. It's a victim of being in the wrong side of politics in the country. Though that's a political, that's a highly politicized position, and she was on the wrong side of politics. There's cases of the people who are seen from being from her faction. If you look at the Estina Terry issue,
sure.
You know, for clearing those people and understand. So it was playing very clear politically which cases is she going to put aside and so forth. But the damage is done to that office. The attack on her as a person. Look, another thing that people were celebrating, you know, I watched that whole process. I looked at the MPs celebrating to say, this is a victory, we've made history. But to make history with what I call a snacks thing, an ugly thing. We must make history with beautiful things. It's the first time in the history of this country that a person is to be removed by parliament to death majority. It's okay. It's good when she did wrong or she was found wanting or doing wrong. It's okay. But you can't celebrate such. When you are failing to use your two-third majority to achieve things that will move us forward as a country. And so when do we actually celebrate achievement in government? When something negative happens and divides the nation, or when something that is very positive Parliament must stand up and say, we have done something positive, let's celebrate it. I didn't see any MPs celebrating the president signing the sign language, the 12th language of South Africa into law. That's a huge achievement, and they didn't celebrate that. So when they are biting and fighting and calling each other names, then they celebrate that. Now, I found it very clumsy.
Now, before the vote happened, Secretary General of the ANC, Mbalula,
yes,
said that he expects every ANC member of parliament to be in parliament to vote, and only death should stop you from showing up.
Yes.
Minister Dlamini Zuma didn't show up.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is going to happen?
Well, look, I've listened to the Secretary General Fikile and with his exaggerated statements. I've listened to the ANC Chief Whip, Majodina.
Pemi, yes.
Yes. And she said she didn't know where Dr. Dlamini Zuma is,
yes.
The minister. But again, you see, they've created a problem for themselves because it has happened that Dr. Dlamini Zuma defies not just being absent, vote against...
As a member in good standing.
As a member in good standing.
Yes.
It has also happened before that people like Pravin Gordhan had voted against the party line. But so it's going to be very difficult for the ANC disciplinary committee to discipline Dr. Dlamini Zuma. It's going because this practice has been there. It depends on whose side. But with her, she has been consistent. You know, she has done it in the Jacob Zuma admin. She has done it in the Ramaphosa admin. She didn't show up, and the only one who didn't show up. But
do you think she was making a statement?
I think she was making a statement. I think it was deliberate. I actually had...
No, maybe the lift was stuck.
I actually had wished she did what she did the last time,
yeah,
to go there and vote against as a principal, as a member of parliament, not as a member of the ANC.
Yes, yes, yes.
But I think in order not to defy the party line and not to compromise her position and her belief, she decided, I'm not going to go there. Fresh, what can they do? You know, the only thing that they can is that the president must remove her out of office and reshuffle cabinet and all that. But I think if they are going to try and take this through a disciplinary hearing, then we face with serious legal challenges.
Sure.
Because it has happened before, others have done it before. You understand? I mean, I listened at an old clip of the chairperson of the ANC, Mr. Gwedeman Tashe, talking about how people should draw the line not to vote against the party line. Then there's another one where he says, no, we cannot be voting like cows and just be saying, well, we must be principled and must vote with conscience. When does conscience apply and when doesn't conscience apply? Mm-hmm. But it's a wait-and-see situation. Look, the ANC has been committing a lot of own goals. And I think this is also another trap that they may commit another own goal. Basically, I think President Ramaphosa is not going to engage into tussles with Dr. Zuma. That's, at the moment, it will not be politically wise to do that.
Sure.
I was not at work. I can just say I was not feeling well. I was supposed to come. I didn't report. It was too late. I was sick.
The lift was stuck. You're welcome, Mama. The lift was stuck. Let's go to East London. EFF, CIC, Julius Malema is being charged or accused of discharging a firearm that belonged to his bodyguard at the 5th birthday celebration in 2018. And he went on a bit of a rant yesterday because he says for the past 5 years, the magistrate is always late. And she defended herself and said, no, what I do is I sit in my chambers, which are 5 minutes away from here, until I am told. In fact, she says, nobody tells me when everyone is settled. But why should you be told? Just be on time.
That's how court operates. You see, I'm glad this happened.
Yeah.
Some of us who literally live in, I've been in court 53 times in my life,
yeah,
for various stuff.
Yeah.
That's how they operate. Until everybody is settled, in judges, they call them judge associates.
Sure.
Okay, or magistrate assistants, whatever. Once everybody is settled, everybody is in court and the proceedings are ready, the judge associates or the assistant or a messenger of the court will go and call the
and say, well, now we're ready.
We are ready to proceed.
Okay.
That's how it's done. That's
okay.
The practice. It's not, they do it everywhere.
So are you saying Juju is aware of this practice?
He should be aware, or at least his legal team should be aware of that. He should be aware.
And
Julius is a politician in court.
But whose responsibility is it that everyone is settled on time? and that we're closing the doors because we need to start.
Yes, it's the court marshals,
okay,
the messenger of the court, and those ladies or gentlemen that sit in front of me that are handing over the files. Once everybody is there, they normally check with counsels and the prosecutors to say, is everybody in the house?
Sure.
Can we call the magistrate or the presiding?
Sounds like a DJ. Is everybody in the house? Put your hands in the air. Wave them like you just don't care.
You see, guys talking politics with DJs is good picking. So that's how it's done. But there's two elements that I forgot. So that's the process.
Yes, yes.
It does happen as well, fresh in courts, that the presiding officer, after sitting and thinking overnight or over weeks, would say to the two parties, meaning the prosecuting authority and the counsels for the accused, can I meet you in my chambers before we start?
Yes.
So she says she sent that request. Mm. And this one denied or declined to say, we are not coming. But nobody took the message back to her. If that's what transpired, she did nothing wrong.
Okay.
If that's what transpired. Mm. Because when you send a message through the court messenger to the counsels or the representatives of the accused, and they declined, that person was supposed to go back and inform the presiding with that, no, they don't want to meet you in chambers. They are ready to proceed in court. Mm. So if that's what happened, but Julius mentioned that it's not the first time. You see, now that becomes a problem. If she is perpetually late, which I'd find it very, very strange that a magistrate can be late perpetually, and she was, I mean, this case has been running for over 5 years. And I would find very strange that they allowed it to continue to happen up to this time. Now, do you want my idea of what transpired?
Tell us.
You know, I always tell people, one thing that you don't want to do in South Africa is to step on to Juju's toes, then he will make noise. But I think, number one, Julius and the legal team, I don't know why they refused to go and meet the magistrate in the chambers, and I don't know why did she call them now to meet in the chambers. But I think they've realized how serious this charge is. Because this is a very serious charge. I can tell, being a firearm collector, I can tell you, discharging a rifle, not just a firearm, high caliber rifle in a public place, it carries a minimum of 5 years, you know, sentence to prison then. Mm. But that's not the only thing. The other element is, at that stage, at some stage, whether it is charged, whether it was blanks or whatever, Julius was in possession, it was in arm of a firearm that is not registered, he's not allowed to carry. Mm. He's not licensed to carry. That was not a shooting range, that was not a practice place, that's a public place. It was not his rifle. It belonged to the bodyguard. The bodyguard is also facing very serious charges of handing a firearm to a person that is not allowed by the law. So these are very serious.
Can't he argue power dynamics?
What power dynamics?
My boss said escape rifle holder.
No. It doesn't work like that. If you have a firearm license, you know the Firearms Control Act. It's very clear on who should handle the firearm. I mean, how and where.
Even if your boss asks for it.
Boss or new boss. I mean, please, come on. The firearms kill people. They're very dangerous. That's a weapon. That's not a toy. And I said, it's not like using the vehicle that belongs to the company.
Sure.
And my boss says, I'll drive myself tonight. Give me the keys. There's a totally different story. There's a Firearm Control Act. And you know that there's very serious issues in South Africa regarding firearm ownership. Mm-hmm. Most of murders in South Africa are committed with illegal firearms and things like that. So the charge itself, not to say Julius is guilty or what, but the charge itself is a very serious charge.
Yes.
And let me tell you, now it's going to be very difficult. And Juju is very smart, guys. He played to the gallery purposefully. It is going to be very difficult now for this magistrate to find him guilty. Actually, what should happen because of those utterances and argument, I think it will be appropriate if the magistrate can excuse herself from this process, because she's going to be under pressure.
So you figure it was a chess move?
It was a chess
that rent.
It was a very, very grand chess move to say, now she's going to be in a very difficult position to say, if I find this guy guilty, they are finding him guilty because he irritated me.
He called me out,
he exposed me, and you understand? So I would advise, if I was the advisor to the judiciary, to say the magistrate must excuse herself from this case. The damage is done. It's dented now. You understand? Then it must be a new neutral person who comes and takes it over. And then again, we'll spend another 5 years running to the courts trying to figure out if Juju was guilty or not to discharge a firearm in a public place, and where there were thousands of people along those lines. But I think it was a chess move. I think it was a political move to say, nah, I'm going to put this magistrate in the corner. that he has been misbehaving. You know, knowing Julius, why did he let this magistrate stood him up so many times? So many times. Mm. He himself said, every time we came to the court, not even once, you were on time. Why did he let it happen up to this hour? I think they are realizing the seriousness of this charge and the way it will go. You know, sure. It may dent his political standing. Mm. Maybe they should start negotiating with the state in this matter. I would have done it.
Sure.
I would have negotiated if... Knowing what's at stake, I would have negotiated with the prosecuting authority to get a slap on my wrist, you know, a warning or thinking, look, he doesn't have criminal records. He's not a criminal. He doesn't have a history of that.
It was a moment of excitement at the party.
Exactly. Understand? That's what the EFF leader and his legal counsel should have done at the beginning. Don't go and try and argue. I don't know what are they arguing, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, it was on public space. The firearm was discharged. I vividly recall when he tried to do it again, Advocate Dalimpov went to say, yeah, stop. Mm-hmm. You understand? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's in the public space. So what are you trying to defend? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my view with this matter.
Let's go to Zimbabwe. President Emmerson Mnangagwa has been in the news because he's clearly, maybe going the Bongo route and starting a dynasty of sorts in Zim.
It was Africa.
His 35-year-old son, David Kudakwashe, Deputy Minister of Finance and Economic Development. Apparently, this position was given via a youth quota. And I guess there's no other young Zimbabweans who could be minister, deputy ministers of finance. And his nephew, Tongai Mafidi Mnangagwa, deputy minister of tourism and hospitality.
Yep.
And there's also Sean and Collins, who are twins, who were also mentioned as having positions.
Isn't it sense that it's very, very big
position? And his wife the other day was given an honorary PhD.
PhD.
By Harby.
We spoke of dynasties happening in West Africa the other day.
In fact, a Times Live article reported that in response to a question regarding him reappointing Kirsty Coventry, apparently an underperforming Minister of Sports and Recreation, Arts and Culture, he said, "I've reappointed her because I am happy with her performance. Whoever was not impressed by her can appoint someone else when they become president."
That's arrogant. I think that was very cheeky of President Mnangagwa to do that. But you know, really,
what's going on, though?
I think this is a slap on the Zimbabwean face. You know, already the man ascended to that office with questionable election and process, and you still go and you appoint your own son. Look, there's nothing wrong in children of politicians, and I'm one of those, and to be businessmen, to do business with the state, or to be appointed in position they qualify for.
Sure.
But really, in all this mess in Zimbabwe, and you become a deputy minister of finance and trade and all that, that's a very powerful position, your own child. Then you still bring your niece as well, and or nephew, and then there's other twin batsoholo somewhere that you throw them in there. They are running a dynasty, and I wonder, it's just that parties like ZANU-PF, they've got an element of intimidation. You can't question leadership, you know. And I see the ANC is becoming that in South Africa now, that you don't question leadership. Why would ZANU-PF, let's start with ZANU, the members of ZANU, allow this to happen, where the president is building up a dynasty, is building, surrounding himself with family members and not even distant cousin, what immediate family members in the cabinet that is questionable. But I think it's a slap on Zimbabwean people. And we know that Zimbabwean men, at some stage, they were the most intelligent, most qualified or highly qualified people on earth. So you can't tell me that with all those Zimbabweans, they couldn't find a better minister or deputy minister of finance. In order to avoid, you know, such questions and us sitting here and debating such matters, you even go further and you appoint your nephew as well, and then your nieces and your uncles and all that. And I think it's an unfortunate situation, and I think it's a joke. I think this whole cabinet, you know, it happened before where President Mugabe was propelling Grace Mugabe,
the wifey.
I mean, what's wrong with this African leaders? Fortunately, in South Africa, we have not been in that situation yet.
Didn't Equatorial Guinea's Nguema appoint his son deputy president?
Yes.
Yeah.
And when people start rebelling and we have coups and we have problems, we put a blind eye and we keep quiet about such things. But I don't think President Mnangagwa should have done that.
Our final story is a story I wish we'd seen more of in the media. The G20 saying to the African Union, here is a seat. Welcome to the club. What are the implications of that? Should we be excited? Should we worry? And why wasn't a big deal in the media? Yes, it was there, but it wasn't a big deal.
It was. I'm actually disappointed that the media didn't report on this.
Yeah.
It went completely silent. Immediately after, remember this came 2 weeks after the BRICS summit.
Mm.
And now there's a very big, you know, the G20, it's actually 19 countries, including South Africa. South Africa has been the only African country represented in the G20, and 19 others. Then the 20, I mean, and 18 others, the 20th member of the G20 has been the European Union.
Oh, yes.
And I said, so again, Germany, France, Italy are members of the G20 as independent countries.
Mm.
But then they are also members of the European Union.
Sure.
You see, for me, that disjuncture, that's a problem already to say. These countries, when there's voting and veto powers within the G20, what happens to the vote of Germany, Italy, and France?
Absolutely.
When they're also represented? And we are sitting in the same situation now, firstly, as Africa, whereby South Africa is a member of G20. Now it's going to be G20 plus because now they are 21.
Mm.
There's an African Union. What does it mean? Does it mean when South Africa goes to the G20 engagement, will they fly the South African flag while they are also carriers of the African Union flag?
Mm.
Imagine a situation where South Africa will be chairing the African Union and there's a G20 summit.
Mm.
Then the president of South Africa is supposed to go to the G20 summit to represent African Union. Then what happens to the South African flag? So those are some of the dynamics, but those administrative dynamics. And luckily, the G20 does not have a secretariat,
sure,
unlike other multilateral bodies. What happens is the country that hosted the last time or that chaired the last time, like it was Indonesia, and the current, which was India, and the next, which is Brazil, they form a what do they call it? They form a secretariat. They don't have a permanent sitting secretariat. But this is long overdue. I'm very skeptical. It is nice and well and good for African countries, 55 African countries, to be represented in multilateral bodies. But why now? Understand? And my why now comes from an element of, is it because they are countering the East moving and forming relations through BRICS and also, you know, individually, Russia-Africa summit, China-Africa relationship? Are they countering that? Because the G20 countries are mainly Western countries, which includes two countries from Latin America, Argentina and Brazil, and some Asian countries. Are they countering that move? Why is Africa being seen as an ally and an important partner at the moment? One of the two major focuses of the G20 countries, one is finance, because the main program of the G20 is the ministers of finance, as well as the governors of the Reserve Bank, you know, forming that one arm. The other arm looks at things like climate change and things like that. Now, Africa has been impacted negatively by climate change that is being caused by members of the G20,
sure,
the big guys, the industrialized countries. Now that they've finished polluting the world and determining to countries like South Africa that you can't burn coal to this extent, now they're starting to bring them closer to say, come, let's talk. ECOWAS is busy chasing France out of there for their mining minerals. South Africa needs to burn more coal to keep lights on at the moment. And because that will impact on the Western countries that bring them closer. It is nice and well and good to be a member of these multilateral forums, to participate, to can have a voice sitting there. It is nice and well, but I wish and pray that the African leaders who are going to be representing us at that particular forum of the G20 countries, which includes some members of the G7, they should know that we have been a dustbin of the world. They should remember that we've been the feeder of the world. You know, Africa has been feeding the world with food, with minerals, with labor, with everything else that the West needed and the East. It came out of Africa. And even if they don't go to those platforms with that agenda to say they're going to tell their now permanent members to say, you are not going to treat us like a feeding scheme.
Sure.
Like, you're going to donate to us.
Or make us feel like we're imposters.
Well, we're imposters.
We don't really
yeah.
belong. You're doing us a favor.
You know, also, we must not also be excited as a nation and an African nation at large. We should not be excited by just belonging into this summit and going there with suits and ties and photo shoots. And then there's programs that are all out. But these programs that are the 2030 program, the 2050 UN programs, they are not bearing fruits for us as Africans. You know, we hear all this. They look very nice on paper. The global summits on environment and global change and whatever, if you read it on paper, it's very good intentions. Has Africa benefited from that? Will we benefit now that we are permanent members? That's something we should guard against and not just be permanent members sitting there rubbing shoulders and taking photo shoots and going to meetings and coming back. The Russia-Africa summit has come and gone. Media and everybody's quiet. We don't see the progress. Okay, the BRICS progress, there's a little bit of I must not be selfish, that I'm benefiting a little bit from it. I'm studying Russian now thanks to the BRICS program.
Are you serious?
Yes, I started 2 days ago.
Okay, so you're learning Russian is for what precisely?
Look, I love languages. I speak 13 languages, but also I've got an interest in international forums,
sure.
especially the BRICS. Mm. If I decide to change career, to move, and it will be better to be able to work as could be to learn Russian fresh as for my career and for equipping myself.
Are you going to add Mandarin? You might as well.
No, I think I'll stop now. I'm already struggling with Russian. Yo, guys, no, it's not easy. I wanted to quit yesterday.
So what can you say so far in Russia?
I'm not going to say anything. Oh, no. I can say quite a number of things. I know it's very simple. Why it's video? But the writing is going to be the most difficult part.
Yeah.
The letters.
Yeah. The writing will be problematic.
Yeah, the writing will be problematic. But if I can just learn how to speak and to say thank you and ask for wine.
You love wine. So Nastarovia will probably be the first thing you know.
No. Nastarovia, they use it mainly. You know, it's like the German beer. They use it mainly on vodka.
For vodka, yes.
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 But I've learned that wine is vino. It's vino. But again.
Nyet.
Yeah.
And da.
But you know what's going to be easy?
Yeah.
I must just get a blonde, blue-eyed Russian.
But don't they still have Russian brides? Can't you order one? Your next wine order a Russian bride.
I'll think about it. But look, going back to politics on a serious note,
yeah,
I think we should not just learn languages, Mandarin and Russian. We should use, because this program, for example, is not Russian, just the language, Russian for doing business with Russia.
Oh, yes.
So there's a business acumen element. Mm. One part of the class, it's business management with Russia and all international business. So that's what Africa should do. We should invest in that. Mm. We should know. I've always said language is very important in order to infiltrate, to penetrate, and to know what's happening with your business partners. But it should not end us, you know, being members, subscribers to international forums. So we should know what we want to get out of it.
Absolutely. Childhood friend of mine, I think, probably saw the curve long, long ago, because about 22 years ago, she started learning Mandarin.
Wow.
She even relocated to China, I think, for 3 years. And she now has a master's in Mandarin. And she does work with banks. She does translations.
Language, bro, I can tell you. Knowing
it's a
gateway. I managed to be in some of the positions I occupied
in
my current position because of my fluency in Portuguese.
Sure.
So that helps. It opens doors. Mm. And it also makes you a little bit unique. Unique in a sense that when there's a post that requires a person with that acumen, you will fit in easily.
Absolutely.
But it's very important. And these are what colonialists and imperialists do. They learn our languages. Mm. You understand? You must see Chinese speaking Zulu or Soto. You must see the Pakistanis running spaza shops in the townships speaking Kasital. And that's what made them successful. Because once a person starts speaking your language, you start to relate
better. There's no
barrier, in that instance. I spent what? I went to Brazil with crash course in Portuguese, and I couldn't survive. I'll never forget
until
my
met a Brazilian.
Until I met a Brazilian woman, and everything started flowing smooth, and my life became peaceful. But yeah.
On that note, I think let's wrap it up. Thank you so much, Botsang.
Thanks, my brother.
We love your insights as always. We love your perspective, and we appreciate you.
No, I really appreciate the following the team, as well as, you know, the comments of the people.
Sure.
You know, every day I search, I'm looking for somebody to lambast us. I don't know whether they are scared of us or are we really hitting the right button? But I like the reviews. I'm very impressed, and we intend to give more information. No, what we do, we collect information and we share it with people. And, you know, last week we spoke about citizenship and birth certificate. You don't know how many people wrote to me privately and said, wow, I didn't know that. Mm. I didn't know that even if my child is born, having a birth certificate does not mean you are a citizen. So this is the kind of public administration information that this platform we intend to share with the people.
Absolutely.
The government is supposed to be doing it. NGOs are supposed to be doing it. We decided to team up together and do that. And I think it's for the good of the nation.
Where do we find you on social media?
Botsangm@gmail.com and also @Botsangm on social media platforms. And then on the telephone, it's 082-485-9100.
Sure. Ladies and gentlemen, Botsang Mwilwa is about to leave the building. Shout out to Amp Studios for housing us. We love working in your space. Mad shout out to Africa Podcast Network, Pezulu Works for the cinematography. Shout out to Trevor and the team. Also want to big up Otis The Floor Fraser for all of our audio imaging. And Botsang Mwilwa, of course, our political creative producer, Kuvesh Mohan, and show producer, Keletso Modisa King. Email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Have a great political week in spite of yourselves.